So we discussed like 64, 65 and 66, right, last time. So anybody wants to share any of the points we discussed or just briefly summarizing? So what is this section mainly about, this subsection? 64 to end of the chapter.
How does he engage this?
Who is he?
The
transcendentalist. Yeah, how does he engage his senses? So how does he engage his senses? So 64.
Yeah.
What are the regulative principles of freedom?
There are four, right? No intoxication, no gambling, no weed,
no meat eating.
And then some do's, more chanting, association, books, diet of prasadam, and devotional service.
So a person is free from all attachment and aversion, and he is able to control his senses through regulative principles of freedom, can obtain the complete mercy of the Lord. So Prabhu said we discussed about mercy also, causeless mercy factor, right?
Yeah.
We discussed some examples there, right? Like how did we discuss?
Yeah.
Like how
hippies,
and also like I don't know, did we have a brainstorming session as to like now how all of you came to Krishna consciousness?
We talked about that.
Then here it's very inspiring. Okay.
Yeah.
Then 65. For one who is thus satisfied in the threefold miseries of material existence, exists no longer. In such satisfied consciousness, one's intelligence is soon well established. So here the Krishna is saying that when he's satisfied in Krishna consciousness, threefold miseries exist no longer. What does that mean? Three miseries. But what does it mean they exist no longer? He is still here, right? In the material world.
He doesn't get affected.
Yeah.
He will not feel that, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it will happen.
He will feel it actually in the sense.
He doesn't care.
He will not get disturbed. He will continue his service irrespective of this. So that's so basically literally they exist, but in all good sense they don't exist. In the sense it doesn't affect him. That's the thing. In such satisfied consciousness, one's intelligence is soon well established. And now 66th verse. So Krishna is saying again, one who is not connected to the Supreme can neither have transcendental intelligence nor a steady mind, without which there is no possibility of peace. And how can there be any happiness without peace? So we discussed, right, how, you know, we are not happy because we are not peaceful. Many times, many people, you know, they take sleeping pills even to sleep because there is no peace of mind. Because there is no peace of mind, there is no happiness. So here...
And also we talked, Mataji, for materialists, you know, they don't have any single goal, so their goal keeps changing. That's why
there is
no peace of mind.
Peace of mind, yes. Yes. Yeah. Actually, in one of the purports, Srila Prabhupada says, people are, I don't know the words, but mainly people are confused or bewildered because of lack of ultimate goal. Because we don't know what is ultimate goal, keep taking small goals. Okay.
Right.
Like for example, if we take ourselves also, right? Okay, first we say, even myself, like how my dad trained me for education, like, first until 10th, okay, you have 10th, right? After that, you know, okay, now you have to study for MCET, there is an MCET exam to get good grade there. And after that, I thought, okay, I'm done now. I got good grade, I got into good school. Then, no, you have to get gold medal in BTEC. And I thought, okay, I'm done now. Then he said, no, you have to get job. Then after that, he said, okay, now you go for masters. Then after that, job. So that's all. You just go for a short-term goals. Once, actually, that's what I felt. Once I finished with masters and I got job in Microsoft, For me, I felt all everything, whatever I could have done, I have accomplished. Then I was very restless at that time. It's like, okay, what is next now? That's when, you know, I got straight. And then somehow, you know, I came to Krishna consciousness. Then we found the ultimate goal. Now, this goal is, in one way, not reachable, right? So easily. So, you know, you can keep going on the same pursuit. So that we can become fixed up. Yeah. So what else we discussed in that purport? Yeah, disturbance is due to in this the same purport. Fifth line, sixth line, Prabhupada is writing, disturbance is due to the want of ultimate goal.
Right.
And when one is certain that Krishna is the enjoyer, proprietor and friend for everyone and of everyone and everything, then one can with a steady mind bring about peace. So this is a peace formula. It is discussed in 5th chapter, right? 5.29. Bhuktaram Yajya Tapasam. So actually Prabhupada was invited to for some International Peace Festival or something to give a lecture. So he prepared a class on this 5.29 verse, the Bhuktaram Yajya Tapasam. And somehow for some reason he couldn't go there or something, and it was not, he couldn't deliver it, but the it was there. So let's go to that verse, 5.29.
Page 255.
Bhoktaram Yajya Tapasam
Sarvaloka Maheshwaram
Suhridam Sarvadbhutanam Nyatvamam Shanti Mrichati.
Hare Krishna Prabhu.
I can see from
maybe they muted. Oh, Madhav Prabhu.
I don't know if he's able to hear it.
Okay, so in 5.29, a person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the supreme lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from pangs of material miseries. So there are three factors here. First of all, a person in full consciousness of Krishna. Okay, that's one. But how? What consciousness? That Krishna is the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities. That means he's a supreme enjoyer. That means whatever we do, he is the one who has to get the, he gets the benefits. And supreme lord of all planets and demigods means he's supreme proprietor. That means whatever is there belongs to him. And is a benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities. Means he's supreme friend. Then he attains peace. So how does it work? When we know the, when he, somebody knows these three factors, how does he get peace? Then,
the reason why we are struggling is we don't know who we are, we don't know our position, we don't know why we are doing the things that we are doing. So once we know those two things, then we can know, work in full peace of mind, knowing that he'll take care of us.
So that the details of that knowing of him is here, like there are three factors, right? Supreme enjoyer, supreme proprietor and supreme friend. So I wanted to elaborate on like how these three combined together gives the peace, like, you know, like a logical conclusion. I don't know whether we discussed last time. So for example, for instance, let's say if we understand Krishna as supreme beneficiary, that it means supreme enjoyer, right? So we, when we do something, we don't claim for our enjoyment. So we try to serve him, right? Because we know he is the ultimate enjoyer. We do it for his pleasure, and in doing so, we get pleasure, right? And then when we know that Krishna is the supreme proprietor, we don't claim anything is ours. So when we lose it or gain it, we don't get bothered, right? And then last one is supreme well-wishing friend. So anything happens to us, we know that it's all by the mercy of the Lord. We discussed many times, right? A devotee considers misery or happiness as mercy of the Lord. So with all these three combined, whatever happens in the world, he remains peaceful. First of all, he is not doing anything for himself, right? Because it's Krishna, his supreme enjoyer. Even if he gains something, he thinks it's Krishna's, but he's giving me for using in Krishna's service. Because he's a proprietor, right? And the last one is, he whatever happens, he knows that it's all by the mercy of the Lord. So with three together, he remains peaceful. So that's what in detail is explained in the purport. So that's a verse Krishna Prabhupada is referring to in this. So continuing that purport, therefore one who is engaged without a relationship with Krishna is certainly always in distress and is without peace. However much he may can make a show of peace and spiritual advancement in life. Okay, so here actually Prabhupada is referring to different types of spiritual paths. So here he's saying even if he shows as if he's making spiritual advancement, he'll not be peaceful if he doesn't know Krishna's ultimate goal. Like for example, worshipping some kind of demigod, right? Some may think that's spiritual. Okay, many paths like Mataji says, right? Always, okay, somebody, you know, just does yoga. What if my goal is just being peaceful? But still, the Prabhupada is saying that it's just to make show. It doesn't really give peace. Krishna consciousness is a self-manifested, wow, it's a wonderful statement, no? The self-manifested peaceful condition which can be achieved only in relationship with Krishna. What does this mean, self-manifested?
Something you create?
No, it's very, you know, obvious. It's evident. What to say? It's all self-evident. Means like you can see somebody is peaceful. It's not like a make show as we discussed earlier. In different situations, that peaceful state of mind doesn't get disturbed. Otherwise, we can make act as if we are peaceful for some time. After some time, it's not, right? But it happens only because of achieved only in relationship with Krishna, with the three factors, the supreme enjoyer, supreme proprietor, and supreme well-wishing friend. Yeah, this also relates to the point where Prabhupada was telling earlier, right? Krishna consciousness is pareshanubhuti, means it's self-experienceable. Like when we eat, we know whether when we are full, right? When we are full. Similarly, as we make advancement, we'll know that we are making advancement. That's what Prabhupada was giving. The same thing, self-manifested or self-evident. So any more discussion about last week's?
Another point was that, you know, unless the Lord is in the center, you know, fights will break out, yours, mine.
Mm.
That also leads to a supreme enjoyer, right?
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, even in family, actually, if Krishna is not in center, it doesn't work out. Like we both share with each other many times, like, we both are strong personalities actually. But then somehow or the other, if we were not devotees, I don't think our marriage would have worked. But, or trying to be devotees, sorry. But now because, you know, we are trying to keep Krishna in center, somehow the personalities, instead of clashing, they are working together. So that we can stay for sure, like, you know, keeping Krishna in center changes the whole perspective of the things. Because then we can, you know, we can say sorry, or, you know, we can sometimes give in for others, something, because we know it's for Krishna's, like for example, you know, Prabhu, he encourages me to do this class, right? Because it takes for him to stay there and take care of kids, right? Like, it's one way to say, maybe it's easy for him, but his other way is his heart, right? To help me also to stay connected. So that's very nice. Okay, so we'll do the today's section, 67. That verse, Prabhupada. इन्द्रियाणि चरतां यन्मनो अनुविद्यते तदस्य हरति प्राज्ञां वायुर्नाम इवाम्बसि इन्द्रियाणि चरतां यन्मनो अनुविद्यते तदस्य हरति प्राज्ञां वायुर्नाम इवाम्बसि. As a boat on the water is swept away by a strong wind, even one of the roaming senses on which the mind focuses can carry away a man's intelligence.
Is there one similar purpose?
Similar, yeah. But
yeah. Shri yes. Krishna was in the earlier verse only. It's 60. Yeah. The senses are so strong and impetuous, O Arjuna, that they forcibly carry away the mind even of a man of discrimination who is endeavoring to control them. So he is saying that senses can control the mind. So similarly here Krishna is saying he can also affect the intelligence. Even one of the senses, so it's more emphasis, even not only all the senses, even one of the senses if it's not controlled and if the mind gets under its control, under the senses control, then it can even affect the intelligence. So it's now a level even more higher. As a boat on the water is swept away by a strong wind. Krishna is giving analogy here. So does anybody has an experience, any experiences like this? Like what are the senses? What are the senses usually? And anybody knows the count of senses?
Five
working, five senses, right? Which are?
Touch,
eye. Two eyes,
nose.
Tongue.
Tongue.
Belly and genital. Oh, ears.
Oh,
there are.
Those are the
karmendriyas. Yeah, karmendriyas. Yeah, there are.
Five karmendriyas, five karmendriyas.
Five working senses
and five
knowledge acquiring senses. Yes. Yeah, so anybody?
Five of them are ears,
eyes, tongue.
Eyes, nose, tongue, and skin.
Ear, skin, yeah.
Skin. And five karmendriyas are.
Working senses are?
Working senses are hands, legs, genital organs, organs of reproduction. It's four. And tasting tongue? Speaking tongue.
Yeah.
Speaking tongue, right?
Yeah, I also don't remember now.
Which does the action.
So for us, these we are talking about the other ones you first
the
mentioned.
Knowledge,
the first,
knowledge.
Yeah. So can anybody share some experiences how one of these senses somehow, you know, they diverted our mind or something? Like let's say eyes, right? Eyes means we want to see things. And ears, we want to hear things. Right? Nose, you want to smell. You want to taste. Right? Skin, you want to touch.
It happens every day.
Yeah.
For example,
mainly,
eyes.
Mostly for taste, oh, right?
Taste. The main thing is like, now, the eyes and all, now with age we can control. Like you go to shopping or something, you see something, the eyes see it. And then you know that, okay, you don't want it, whatever. And then sometimes, if it's powerful desire or something, right? It's always a thinking, oh my god, I didn't buy it or something. I used to, not anymore. It comes with, now the most difficult is the eating. I know that I don't want to eat it at this time because I already have lunch and the next meal is only coming in between. You go to the pantry for something, you see something, you want to eat it. So that is the most difficult part. The other things are okay, you know, you don't need it, so you won't buy it. Those are okay, it's fine now. I think with age you kind of okay with that.
One more strong thing usually is hearing.
That's what many people
who are used to listening to music, you know, all rock music or film music, whatever, that becomes very strong, right? Very strong attachment.
Each person may have different. For me, hearing when I was young, I used to sleep with Binaka Gitmala. Every night I used to sleep with Binaka Gitmala. My mom would, like, in the night, she'd say, you are hearing, and in the morning it will just be on. Like, after 10 o'clock or something, the program used to be done. And that radio would be on and I would sleep off. And for me, I don't hear any. It's been a long time, I don't hear any Indian music or anything. It just went up very quickly. But the eating is the part for me.
Very difficult. Then all five are dragging me. So I found the Jnanendriya and Karmendriya. So the Jnanendriya are pools of knowledge. Eyes for eye and sight, nose and smell, ear and for hearing, tongue and taste, skin and touch. The Karmendriya, the tools of duty, are legs, arms, genitals, anus and tongue.
Yeah, we got it right, There is one, have anybody heard about the example of musk deer? I think we discussed
it.
Actually for all the five, there is very nice example for each of them.
DIS also they give
it's
the example.
There, yeah.
That he will smell and he will try to find that one.
Exactly.
Kill himself.
Yes, he's captivated by the sense of smell. So he smells it and he's very, he wants to smell it. But actually it's coming from within his body. Then he can kill himself actually. So so that's so, like, for each of the five senses, we could be dragged away as the five horses, right? All the five directions. Okay, we can read the purport. Madhu, do you want to read?
Unless all of the senses are engaged in the service of the Lord, even one of them engaged in sense gratification can deviate the devotee from the path of transcendental advancement. As mentioned in the life of Maharaja Ambarisha, all of the senses must be engaged in Krishna consciousness, for that is the correct technique for controlling the mind.
So Prabhupada is emphasizing more and more that, you know, we should not be lenient. So all the senses should be engaged all the time, as much as all the time. Otherwise, even one of the senses, Krishna is also saying, even one of the senses could deviate us. So I was listening to lecture, Srila Prabhupada's lecture. It's called Krishna, Blessing or the Blessing or Burden. So he was talking about, briefly about, Vigraha. Vigrahas, the DTVC, and Phalagraha, he says. I didn't read the actual Sanskrit, but what I could hear from what Prabhupada said, Phalagraha, he said, or its burden. So what Prabhupada was telling in that lecture is, if we don't have that bhava feeling that, you know, here is Krishna, yes, personally, he is actually greater than the greatest. No, Anur, Anior, Aniyan, Mahatur, Mani, is greater than the greatest, is smaller than smallest, right? And that he himself has come here to receive my humble service. What am I? I'm like such a fallen person. No, I'm an insignificant person, but somehow I'm doing some service, and Krishna personally has come to receive that service. That feeling is very important. If that feeling is not there, then the deity Vigraha will become like a burden. Right? Prabhupada was telling, you will think, now this we have this big building. Prabhupada was telling, we have this big building, and my disciples are taking care of that in my absence when I am going to other places. But after some time, if that feeling is not there, disciples will think, my rascal Guru Maharaj has given this building and these deities, and it's become a burden for me. No, every day I have to get up and, you know, dress them and, you know, all these things. So that feeling, that bhava, Prabhupada is telling, that is very, very essential. Otherwise, same thing will become material, completely material.
So I heard Harivilas Prabhu also saying something similar. He was saying that unless you are convinced that, you know, he is the God, you cannot put in sincere duty every day, consistently, for so many hours.
Yes.
If you don't do that, then it will become, after some time, you will be like, ah.
Exactly.
So either you will be that, or it's like, oh man, what am I doing? Why am I?
Yes. So Prabhupada is giving example. Let's say I am there. He's there. Prabhupada is there. I'm a person, and if somebody gives me a stale flower versus fresh flower, there's a difference, right? No, I will be more pleased if I get a fresh flower. So similarly, if we think Krishna is a stone, we don't mind whether he gets fresh flowers or rotten flowers or whatever, right? But if we think he's a person, then we take all the care, like, you know, does he get a fresh flower, does he get a new dress, does he get this, does he get that. So the point connected to this is that what Prabhupada is telling, if that feeling is there, then a devotee is engages all his senses in Krishna service, then his senses becomes controlled. We discussed, right, the example of Ambarish Maharaj, how he engages all his senses in Krishna service. Which purport it was in? Does remember? Anybody remember? One purport Prabhupada gives, right? Recently, I think I only covered that. 2.61.
Page 128.
So in that we discussed, right, different how Ambarish Maharaj uses all his senses in Krishna service. Ears in hearing, fixes his mind on the lotus feet of the Lord, eyes in seeing the Lord, legs in travelling to the holy place, right, head in offering obeisances. So this is how all the senses can be engaged. So Prabhupada was telling in that lecture, a pujari, he doesn't have to extraneously control his senses. See, let's say while he's dressing the deity, right? So much he has to use his hands and, you know, okay, I have to, you know, bathe and come to the Lord and then, you know, I have to make the offering. All the time he's thinking how to serve the Lord. Then senses are automatically controlled, right? There is no way in that service he can use the senses otherwise, right? So engagement is a way of controlling. That's what we have discussed so many times, right? Engagement is a way of controlling. We don't extraneously try to control. Yeah, all the senses must be engaged in Krishna consciousness. That is the correct technique of controlling the mind. So when senses are engaged, automatically mind is controlled. So then if the pujari focuses all his senses in serving the Lord, then mind will be focusing on Krishna, right? Of course, at our neophyte state, you know, we'll be doing everything and mind will be thinking, you know, I have to go there or next I have this or this thing or that thing. But at least, you know, that's why, you know, why chanting, we chant on the beads. Does anybody know?
Hands for touching, mouth for seeing, ears for hearing.
So three senses are engaged in Krishna's service. So then mind gets controlled. That's why it's important to chant on the beads and hear the mantra. Okay. We can go to the next verse. Therefore, O mighty armed, one whose senses are restrained from their objects is certainly of steady intelligence. Oh, one more point about the previous verse. So, we discussed that hierarchy, right? Where Krishna mentions the proper hierarchy. Senses, sense objects, senses.
Yeah.
Senses, mind, intellect.
Sense objects, then senses.
Objects, senses, mind.
Mind, intelligence and the soul, right? So, that's discussed in 3.42. We discussed earlier also. So, but now here, when the senses are uncontrolled, it takes over the mind and also the intelligence. 3.42 in the verse. We can just quickly go over there. Krishna says, the working senses are superior to dull matter. Mind is higher than the senses. Intelligence is still higher than the mind. And he, the soul, is even higher than the intelligence. So this is the proper hierarchy. But when the senses, which are like, you know, low, almost lowest, if they become uncontrolled, then they can even take over the intelligence and the soul. And how all these things can be controlled is by when the soul is engaged in the super soul, service of the super soul, then everything will be in line. Soul and the senses, everything.
But Mataji, I think I have this question. So the senses are subordinate to our intelligence and whatnot, right? But how come they are always overriding it? Right? Why not? It's like as if they have a life of their own. Like, what is the explanation for that? No, I know that happens and I know it shouldn't happen, but what I'm asking is, why does it have, like, it's as if that is driving the intelligence. It's so how it cannot happen, right? If that is the hierarchy that's given, then
basically what's happening is soul is above all of this,
right?
But soul is giving into the temptations of the senses. See, soul can get dictations from mind, or rather intelligence, let's say, and the senses.
Right.
Let's say immediately when I see, I like to eat sweets, let's say. I like anyway. So, and the senses, when I see the gulab jamun or something, immediately the senses will say, oh, I want to eat it. So, that trigger I get. But my intelligence will say, okay, it's not offered, or, you know, I should not be eating too many sweets, or, you know, today is fasting day. All these things my intelligence will tell. But because senses are uncontrolled, or rather, you know, the soul can be controlled by the desire, strong desire for enjoyment. So because of the desire for enjoyment, we give in to the temptations of the senses. So we get triggers from all of them. But where we give in is based on how much strong we are.
The senses are not controlled, that's why we give in. If the senses are controlled, then they will listen to the intellect.
Yes,
whichever
exactly.
is more controlled,
yes.
will listen to that.
But the desires are from the soul. Right?
Yes. Yes.
And we try to get it through the sense of it, but it doesn't come.
Yes.
Right.
We try to get the pleasure through the senses and through sense object, but
it
will not be satisfied.
Yeah.
But are the desires from the soul or from the mind?
So mind is a repository of the desires, but it basically, as the soul transmigrates to different another body, the subtle desire, like the subtle body also goes, that is mind and intelligence, goes along with the soul. So desires are carried over from life to life, and the repository is the mind, the, you know, the physical place where they are. But actually it's the, we can see, right, our individuality, how much, like, how come, like, my, you know, desires are so different from others, like, what is it, right? It's actually the individuality. Like, we can see, right, we have twins, like, two almost born same time, but they're so different, like, no, so different. One is sober, one is more this thing, so much individual nature. Like, that's why I'm surprised, you know, the Mayavadi philosophy, they say, you know, there is no, everything is one, there is no difference. It's almost, we can't even practically perceive that, you know, how can it be like that? We are so individual, right? Everyone has different desires,
the
different
mind
nature.
Is individual. The mind is different, right? Because the mind and the
mind is, you can say, it's like, you know,
internet.
It's made of same physical elements. But what makes a difference is the soul. Because it has the specific desires. Like, you know, you have specific desires and you have specific history of lifetimes, right? I have specific history of lifetimes. So that makes a difference between you and me. Mind, you can say, it's like, you know, it's like a vessel. It's made of some matter, like, kind of things, right? Two vessels are there, but the contents are different. So actually this verse, Krishna also talks about, I hope I can recollect that verse. Krishna also talks about controlled mind and uncontrolled mind. How a controlled mind is one's friend, otherwise is one's enemy. I don't know where it is.
Oh, I was just hearing that word today morning.
Third chapter?
Melukuti structure. Yeah, it comes in the Bhagavad Gita, but I heard it.
Mana Ripura Atmanaha, it is, right?
Yeah. Then, if you know second line. Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember this. So, where Krishna says that, you know, he talks about yoga practice, and then he says, like, you know, for a for a person who controls his mind becomes his friend, otherwise it becomes his enemy. So controlling So we may think initially in Krishna consciousness, right? We may think, oh, mind is, you know, so crazy. It is the one which is causing me all the trouble. If at all I don't have the mind, you know, I can probably, you know, do everything properly in Krishna consciousness. Sometimes it feels like that. Because, you know, we try to, you know, do something immediately, mind will say, oh, I want to eat this or I want to go there, right? We feel it's such a, because it's uncontrolled, it behaves like an enemy. But the same mind, if we control it, it helps us. Like how I could see it, how I could relate to that verse is like, after some years of practice of coming to Mangalarti, after some time, like, you know, automatically at the time comes, or even if I don't wake up, somehow I wake up. Then, you know, mind will say, okay, don't. And sometimes, you know, when we wake up, we want to sleep more. But I immediately feel, oh, no, 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 I should get up, you know, I want to go. That time I felt, you know, my mind was helping me so much, you know, like, okay, it's help. Because it's whatever helps us come closer to Krishna, that's helping us. But then it's becoming our friend. Okay, we can read the purport.
One could curb the forces of self-gratification only by means of Krishna consciousness, or engaging all the senses in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. As enemies are curbed by superior force, the senses can similarly be curbed, not by any human enemy, but only by keeping them engaged in the service of the Lord. One who has understood this, that only by Krishna consciousness is one really established in intelligence, and that one should practice this art under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, is called the
sadhaka.
Sadhaka. Or a suitable candidate for
liberation. So here Prabhupada, in the first section, he is saying that only by engaging all the senses in Krishna, Lord's service, can senses be controlled. Yeah, that we discussed many times, right? And what he was telling is like, you know, how enemy is curbed. Superior force. The superior force is the Lord, the Super Soul, and the Supreme Lord. So by engaging them in the service of the Lord, the senses can be curbed, or, you know, checked or controlled. Last three lines is very nice. Like, one who has understood this, that only by Krishna consciousness is one really established in intelligence. That's what Krishna is saying, right? One whose senses are restrained from their objects is certainly of steady intelligence. So that person is very intelligent. And that one should practice this art under the guidance of bona fide spiritual master. So it's not on our own. It should be under the guidance of bona fide spiritual master. That's what sadhaka is. We are all sadhakas. And this process is called sadhana bhakti. Right? So we are practicing. It's called probate bhakti. Or like, you know, like devotees in Vrindavan or Goloka Vrindavan also do the same thing. You know, offer things to Krishna, you know, make garlands or do so many things. We are also doing the same thing. But ours is like practice bhakti. We are trying, you know, like how small child cooks in a play kitchen. Right, mom is cooking in the real kitchen, but the girl, baby girl, will say, you know, mama, I want to also cook. Then mama gives like some toys and says, okay, you cook here. It's like that, doing the same thing, but we are just practicing to become perfect. By practicing, we'll become perfect. Then, you know, we can do the same thing again in the spiritual world. So that's why it's called sadhana bhakti. Sadhana is practice, and that practice should be done under the guidance of bona fide spiritual master. So for us, Shishya Guru is Srila Prabhupada and Harivilas Prabhupada. Afterwards, we can have Diksha Guru also, who can guide us practically how to do service. Actually, Prabhupada, you know, it's many times it's said that Krishna conscious devotees are most intelligent. Like in one verse, Krishna says, right? Sri Shudra, like, I don't know the Sanskrit. Even all these people, like the lowest, essentially, women or Shudras or Brahma Bandhus, Brahmana Bandhus, like that means your namesake Brahmanas who are not born in Brahmana family, but they are not following the Brahmanic culture. All these people who take to Krishna consciousness can become perfect. So he was telling Krishna. So in that, Prabhupada was explaining that, you know, so women are generally considered less intelligent. But in that lecture, Prabhupada was telling that, but women who take to Krishna consciousness are most intelligent. Then, you know, they are devotees. Then they are above the mundane material when men, women think. So one incident, very nice incident. So many times Prabhupada in lectures very strongly used to, no, whatever is from the, he speaks from the Shastra. So he always used to tell women are less intelligent, or you know, women need protection. Especially in US, right, he was giving lectures. So many of the women, especially press reporters, they used to protest. Like, they used to think he's a male chauvinist. So one press reporter, she came to, you know, really challenge Prabhupada. So she was asking, you know, openly in front of devotees, you say that women are less intelligent, that Prabhupada is very strong. Yes, if they are less intelligent, you know, they need protection, you know, otherwise they can easily be, they can spoil the whole society, because if they become uncontrolled and they give into temptations, then they can spoil the whole society. That's why they need to be protected. So many times she tried to, you know, put Prabhupada, but Prabhupada never, changed this point. And after that, and many lady disciples were also there. So they were all getting very anxious, like, oh, what is this? You know, they was taking personally. Then after she left, one of the lady disciples asked Prabhupada, oh Prabhupada, is it really, you know, women are less intelligent like that, you know, is it true? Then Prabhupada said, yes, that's true, women are less intelligent, but devotee women are most intelligent. No, the devotees or women who take to devotional service are most intelligent. Because then they are above this mundane, right, because they are transcendental.
Looking at this, I feel women kind of direct the family, right? Women has children and all. Women has a little more a say, in the sense like if they are more devoted, the children will see that.
Absolutely.
So if they are not,
yes,
then it is going to the,
yes,
material thing. That way they are not intelligent. It's not that, I don't think it is, they mean that intelligence, like intelligence, that kind of, because women in a society,
it's not about the brain and all that. Yes.
Yeah, women are very important in a society because they kind of shape the family.
Yes.
In a way. Because women in a family, women are into parties or drinking or those things. The children, obviously, they see their mother. On the other side, if the women are more pious, more into these kind of things, the children, even though they may not do it or whatever, they understand, they have that value. So I feel in a family, women is...
No,
the
so the point
of
is...
Women is very,
yeah,
important.
So when it said women are less intelligent, doesn't mean they are less important. They have their role, everything is there.
No, I'm saying, that's why I'm saying, they are that, from that point of view, maybe they are saying because they are important, so they have to...
less intelligent in the sense that they can easily be tempted, because in many of the, usually men take to spiritual paths, right, because they are more detached. Women are considered, they have more attachments, especially family, right, like husband, emotional husband, children. So they most of the times they don't take to spiritual paths. That's why, because they are more satisfied with, you know, gold, jewelry or clothes, or that's why people are, you know, women who take to devotion service become intelligent. This intelligence is basically whether they are taking to spiritual path or no. That's
not,
all.
Yeah.
It's not about brain,
it's not
or
about
IQ.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not IQ.
Yes.
That's what I was,
yeah,
saying.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's BQ. Bhakti question.
That's good. Yeah. Yeah. So other way we may think, right, okay, so so-and-so person materially advanced, like for example Bill Gates, or so many examples we feel, okay, what they have done, you know, they have got some pious credit, but they have got all the money, everything. So we may feel, actually, you know, we don't have that much so-called money or whatever, but we are taking up to Krishna consciousness. So are we lower than them? Or sometimes, especially manager, right? Our manager is not a devotee and we are trying to practice devotion, so we think, oh, why I have to listen to him? He is not a devotee, I am most intelligent. Right? We may feel. So in those cases, it doesn't work.
Only you put that seat for the chair. Thank you.
So, but somehow Krishna arranges that, you know, we have to get our some karma, so we have to be under somebody to get some that, these things. So, that is there. Yeah. So sometimes we may feel, that's why this point is very important. We may feel actually, you know, are we really doing the right thing? Are we investing in the right thing? Right?
Yes, Prajna Pratishtha, that's the piece, like I
yes,
word Prajna
yes.
Pratishtha,
yes.
Intelligence is established.
Yes.
It's fixed. Mm. It actually came in some other words.
Yes, Sita Prajna.
Yeah,
same.
That's
correct. Very nice. Yeah, man of steady intelligence. Yeah, same thing. Okay.
I think the 61 and 68 are the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
61. So this one just purely talks about restraining senses. That means this.
From their object suddenly observe intelligence. Yeah, they are actually similar.
How many times he says, Prabhu, we are still not getting it. We keep reading it. Keep
senses
reading.
Are restrained from their objects, certainly of steady intelligence. Yeah. So, automatically, see from this, right, from what Krishna is saying, if senses are restrained from sense object, that's a man of steady intelligence. So, devotees whose senses are always engaged in Krishna's service, then automatically senses are controlled, then they are intelligent, right? Right, so literally if you take, that follows the definition. Okay, we'll go to the next verse, very important. Okay, we still have time. Where Krishna says that the controlled mind, right? I think he referred in his giving. 6.6. For him who has conquered the mind is the best of the friends. But for one who has failed, but for one who has failed to do so, his mind will remain the greatest enemy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and after talking about the yoga practice. So Krishna is saying, you know, how important it is to control the mind. And he was telling, it can be a friend or... So if you read the purport, we'll see. First few lines. The purpose of practicing Eightfold Yoga is to control the mind in order to make it a friend in discharging human mission. Unless the mind is controlled, the practice of yoga is simply a waste of time. Yeah. One who cannot control his mind lives always with the greatest enemy. And thus his life and its mission has fallen. So whatever we want to do, yeah, nothing will work out, right? We want to do something, soul wants to do something, mind wants to do something, then mission will be spoiled, right? But if mind becomes our friend, has anybody seen the skit about the mind?
Their,
yeah.
They put the skit and have one trap appears.
Yes, me and my mind. There's a skit which. ISKCON Chowpatty, they kind of, what to say, directed, choreographed or whatever, right? And then here also devotees, they played once. Mm-hmm. So where there, they were showing like, as if mind is a person, like, you know, standing behind and, you know, the soul is sitting there and soul wants to do something and mind will say, no, do this or something, distracts, you know. and like, you know, soul suddenly, tomorrow is exam. So they were all like trying to mimic that tomorrow is an exam. So then I'm studying like this. Then behind my mind is another person. So they will say, TV, watch TV, or go to the movie like this, you know, it will show. Go to the movie, and his mind will say, oh, you have to read, you have an exam, come back. So mind is always, you know, yeah. So then finally, that person takes to Krishna consciousness. And when he chants, mind also chants, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And when he suddenly gets distracted, mind will say, no, 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 chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. The mind becomes a friend at that time. So they literally showed, you know, how when mind becomes enemy, what happens? Mind becomes friend. Then mind only will tell us, okay, don't do this, do this.
So the person doesn't give exam in this chance.
No, then the mind will say, you know, you have to study, do your duty. Yeah. So actually there was a very nice, that reminds me of an incident. One devotee actually, so he was very intelligent, like almost topper in the college. I don't know, but somehow it reminds me of that. So almost topper, everything, but somehow last few days during the exams or something, he didn't chant properly, or somehow, you know, he felt like, you know, I'm anyway topper, or something happened. So that day, when he got the results or something, somehow he went for some party and he passed away. He slowly swayed away from Krishna consciousness and suddenly he passed away. Mm-hmm. So devotees are thinking, you know, at least if you would have chanted properly, you know, your life would have been perfect. So sometimes we feel, you know, when we get this material glory, we neglect Krishna consciousness or Krishna. We think, you know, okay, now I'm... Because the problem is, bhakti can give all these things. As we discussed, right, like we come to Krishna consciousness for one of the four reasons, due to distress or material wealth or something. But once we come, we get all these things satisfied. Then, if that is the goal, ultimate goal, we think if that is the ultimate goal, our goal is satisfied, then we can go away, right? So that's the whole point. Yeah. That's why always we have to keep ourselves, you know, okay, what is, remind ourselves of the goal. What is my goal? What is our goal? What is our final, what we want actually? What are we trying?
Yeah. Trying to serve the Lord in Vrindavan by attaining moksha.
We want to attain pure love for Krishna, right? Pure love for Krishna. So we are practicing to attain the pure love for Krishna, so that we can go back and serve the Lord there in Goloka Vrindavan. So that is our goal.
So next five are like.
Okay. So, did we recite this verse 69?
Yeah.
Only once or twice?
Twice.
What is night for all beings is the time of awakening for the self-control. And the time of awakening for all beings is the night for the introspective sage. It's a very nice verse. So, what Krishna is saying is, what is night for all beings, means like here in terms of materialistic people, is time of awakening for the self-control. We'll discuss that in the purport, Srila Prabhupada, this one. And when we read the purport, it will be more clearer. Yeah, we'll read it and we'll elaborate on it.
There are two classes of intelligent men. One is intelligent in material activities for self-gratification, and the other is introspective and awakened to the cultivation of self-realization. Activities of the introspective sage or thoughtful man are night for persons materially absorbed. Materialistic persons remain asleep in such a night due to their ignorance of self-realization. The introspective sage remains alert in the night of the materialistic men. The sage feels transcendental pleasure in the gradual advancement of spiritual culture, whereas the man in materialistic activities, being asleep to the self-realization, dreams of varieties of sense pleasure, feeling of sometimes happy and sometimes distressed in his asleep, in his sleeping condition.
Mm.
The introspective man is always indifferent to materialistic happiness and distress.
Mm.
He goes on with his self-realization activities undisturbed by material reactions.
Mm. So it's clear now? Little bit? Okay, we'll elaborate.
The second part is not that clear to me. The time of awakening of all beings is like the introspective sage.
Okay. So, what is awakening? What is okay, let's consider it. Awake means active, right? We are doing something. Sleep means basically inactive. So a spiritualistic person, or rather, you know, how does Prabhupada refer to us? A person, introspective sage. Introspective sage is active in activities of self-realization. That means he's awake. But what does a materialistic person do at that time for the activities of self-realization? He's not interested, right? So he's basically inactive. That means he's sleeping. A sage is actively perceiving the goal for self-realization, so he is awake, right? But on the contrary, same activities of self-realization, a materialistic person is not interested, so he is asleep. So the daytime, that means the sage is active during the daytime, the materialistic person is asleep. But whereas materialistic person is awake during the night, doing what? Activities of sense gratification.
Yes.
He's awake. But the sage is asleep because he is not interested in activities of sense gratification. Got it? That's how...
You need to digest that.
It's okay? Anybody wants to paraphrase this, like, so that we can see? Awake means active, right? Asleep means inactive. So what? And there are two kinds of people, right? One is spiritually inclined person, materially inclined person. Spiritually inclined person is active for self-realization, but materially inclined person is not active, so he's basically sleeping. So this daytime is sleep. But materially inclined person is interested only in sense gratification, and whereas spiritually inclined person is not interested. So he is daytime, this is night.
Are you seeing essentially they're opposites?
Exactly.
So it's not the physical day or night, it's the activity based
yes.
day or night.
Yes. Basically, asleep means they are not, as Prabhupada is saying, they are not disturbed. See, if you read more, right? This last, you know, second part of the purport, the sage feels transcendental pleasure in the gradual advancement of spiritual culture. Means he is actually progressing and he is feeling happiness in spiritual advancement. Whereas the man in materialistic activities, being asleep of to self-realization, that means he is not interested in self-realization, dreams of varieties of sense pleasure. So he is just dreaming during that time. Why it's called dreaming? Because this pleasure is just temporary.
Fleeting.
That's why he's sleeping.
The second part is not clear. The time of awakening for all beings is a night for the introspective sage. So, how does... You can say the introspective sage is always awake. There is no night for him. So, because he's...
In this sense, this is about awake... Here, the time of awakening of all beings is referred to as sense gratification. So, the introspective sage is not interested in gratifying his senses for his pleasure. It's not literal awakening. It's not waking up.
So, he's passive in this case.
Exactly. Yes. He's active for perceiving self-realization. He's inactive for perceiving sense gratification. Materialistic person is active for perceiving sense gratification, inactive for perceiving self-realization. That's all. So that's why, because he's sleeping, he feels in the dream, it's fleeting, right? In the dream, he feels happiness and distress. But whereas self-realized person is awake, right? So he doesn't get disturbed for this happiness and distress. So the self-realized person doesn't view objects for sense pleasure. There is a similar verse actually, third chapter, I think. Krishna says, so. karma and
opposites.
Yeah.
Then what is nice for all beings is
Krishna is talks. I know the English of it, but we can the Krishna talks about action, inaction, inaction, inaction. Right? Do you remember the verse?
No, I don't remember. I know.
Yeah,
what
it's
you were
in third
saying.
Chapter. Yeah.
The third chapter.
Yeah,
right?
Third chapter. It's there. If we can. It's okay. Where it says action in inaction?
Yeah, 18.
3.18?
3.8. 4.18.
Yeah.
4.4
chapter.
One who sees inaction in action and action in action is intelligent among men. And he is in the transcendental
position,
although engaged in all sorts of
activities. So this is also another confusing verse, no? What is this? One who sees inaction in action and action in inaction is intelligent among men and is in transcendental position, although engaged in all sorts of activities. So what does this mean is, one who sees inaction in action, that means while doing action, one is seeing inaction, means while engaging is, so we do the last part, right? While doing action means while engaging his senses, he is inactive, means he doesn't get reactions, which is bhakti yoga. In bhakti yoga, we engage all the senses, that means we are acting, working, but we are not getting reactions, we are inactive. But whereas, and he sees action in inaction, that means somebody physically restrains from doing things, like, okay, I'll not eat this. But they are still acting, means they are getting reactions, because while just by living we kill ants or, you know, do so many, we get reactions. Just by not doing anything we are still getting reactions. So one who knows both of them, he is actually fixed in transcendental position.
So it's
similar words, right?
So it means like we are not taking the proprietorship, right? Mainly because they are not saying that we are doing it, like
proprietorship. Yeah, that's also one thing. Other thing is also, why we don't get reactions is because it's akarma. It becomes akarma only because we serve the Lord. Right? Otherwise, we are still acting. Acting means basically we are still getting reactions. Yeah, it's also, it's a similar verse. Okay. So, it's a little bit clear about this verse, 70-69? Okay. Any more questions or comments? Anybody's online?
These two are a little bit confusing. It's more
it
to think.
Yeah, when we come there, we can elaborate more.
Contemplate.
Okay. We'll pause there here now. Okay. Thank you.